The fourth Aliyah of Parshas Va'era begins with HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Moshe and Aaron that when Paro asks for a mofes, you should tell Aaron to take the mateh and throw it down in front of Paro, and it will turn into a tanin. So the question of what is a tanin is subject to different opinions. According to Rashi, it's a snake, although Rav Shamshon Nafal Hirsch argues that it's not a snake, it's some kind of an aquatic animal, perhaps a crocodile. And it's relevant because of the question of what is the symbolism. According to Rabbeinu Bachya, for example, who does understand that it's a snake, interprets it in the sense of the symbolism of a snake, which is associated with the misuse of speech. So just as the Baal Lashon Hara misuses speech, and that's a quality associated with a snake, so too Paro, who is also associated with the Tanin, is guilty of misusing speech as well. The next pasuk tells us that Paro's magicians, the Asu Gamheim, they also did this. What exactly that means is also a subject of discussion. Ibn Ezra understands that they simply performed an illusion that made it look like they were doing this. The Malbim has somewhat more of a pathetic picture that they took the hides of Taninim and put them on themselves and walked around with them to make it look like they had created this miracle. But in any event, they are outdone. Their mate gets swallowed up by Aaron's mate, which the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph calls a nes b'soch nes, a miracle within a miracle. And the Torah Tumim explains that's because it did its swallowing after it already turned back into a mate. Others explain because it didn't get any bigger even after swallowing up theirs. The next pasuk makes one of the many references to Paro's heart being hardened and brings up again the question of how exactly that was happening, to what extent it was happening through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intervention, and to what extent it was happening through Paro's own decisions. So here are the languages, Ve'yechazak leiv Paro v'lo shama aleihem kasher diber Hashem. So the Rabbeinu Miuchas explains here that Paro was doing it, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing it also, Paro was doing it more so, and that may contribute to the question of how it was just that Paro paid the price for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was making happen, because Paro himself was the greater contributor to the process. This leads us into the Makos, starting with Dam. So just to introduce all of the Makos, Rav Shamshon Nafal Hirsch has a overview in which he comments on the first nine. Makos Bechoros is in its own category, but regarding the first nine, he notes that we have three sets of three. Within each of the three, you have two that have warnings, and the third comes without a warning as a punishment for the failure to heed the first two. And within each set, you have three, one that is meant to punish the Geiris, the fact that they were treated as strangers in the land where they should have had full rights, the second to punish the Mitzrayim for treating the Jews as slaves, and the third for the Inui for the greater oppression that they inflicted upon them. And then, looking at each set as a total within itself, so the first set was to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mastery over water and land, the second over the people themselves, and the third over the atmosphere that surrounds the land. So first we start with Dam, and the Midrashim offer many different interpretations as to why that one is considered Mida Keneged Mida. And among the interpretations is that it reflects the fact that the Mitzrim didn't allow the Jews to have Tvila, so that they shouldn't have any further children, or that the Jews were made to draw their own water as part of the extra labor that was imposed upon them, or because the Mitzrim spilled Jewish blood like water, so therefore the association of blood and water, or because they threw the Jewish babies into the water, or because Paro claimed that he controlled the water, so therefore this emphasized just how much he did not control the water. So all of these various reasons why this makkah was specifically appropriate to either punish the Mitzrim for things they had done, or to clearly display just how much they weren't what they claimed to be or what they thought themselves to be. And in that spirit, Pasuk Yud Ches tells us that the Nilu in Mitzrayim, Lishtos, Mayim, and Hayor, that the Egyptians are basically going to give up hope of drinking water from the Nile. And here Rav Hirsch comments, this is also Mida Keneged Mida, that since the Mitzrayim essentially alienated the Jews from being able to feel comfortable in their land, so too they are made to feel alienated from making use of their own land. In Pasuk Yutes, we see that it is Aaron who is told to take his matah and stretch his arm out over the water. And as Rashi tells us, this is because Moshe is not going to be the one to do this because Moshe was saved by the water. And this is a manifestation of the crucial idea that Hakaras HaTov requires not only that we display gratitude to human beings who voluntarily choose to provide us with benefits, but it's a recognition of the fact that we have benefited, and it's an internal awareness, and therefore it has to be expressed even towards inanimate objects who don't choose to benefit us. And therefore the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Sadi Beis, writes that if one benefits from a well, one shouldn't throw rocks into the well. And the Miri writes, one shouldn't even think badly about the well. So here we have an inanimate object that's not going to be aware of how you treat it, and certainly not going to be aware of how you think about it. But Hakaras HaTov demands that the mentality be one of appreciating the benefit. So certainly when dealing with a human being, even if that human being isn't choosing necessarily to provide benefit, or even if they're being compensated or being forced to provide that benefit, so clearly there is an obligation of Hakaras HaTov. That's tremendous Kal V'chomer from here. So they did this, and then Pasuk Chav Beis tells us, V'yasu chein chartume Mitzrayim balateihem, so the Egyptian magicians, they did the same with their spells, and Paro's heart was hardened once again, and he didn't listen. And this is relevant to a comment here that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has specifically in this context, where he raises the question that we find a few references here and throughout to the apparent possibility of magic to take place and to have some kind of reality in the world, and yet we don't see that anymore nowadays, so why should that be the case? And he suggests that when there was in the world actual miracles in a visible, clear way taking place, so then to parallel that, there also was the existence of actual magic, because since these miracles were undeniable, in order to preserve the bechira of people to choose to believe or not to believe, so there was also the countering effect of magic that could offset the presence of these miracles, which is not to say necessarily that this was to increase the test on people, but to give them the option of choosing to believe it or not to believe it, to preserve their bechira. But nowadays, when we don't have overt miracles, so then the existence of magic isn't necessary in order to maintain that bechira. And he suggests in that sense also that this is to explain the position of the Rambam. The Rambam maintains that all magic is fake, and that the prohibition to engage in magic really means there's a prohibition to believe in that which is fake. And others, such as the Vilna Gaon, disagreed very strongly with the Rambam and understood that there was magic in the world, as we see from many sources that seem to indicate its existence. So he suggests, Yaakov Kamenetsky, that perhaps once upon a time that indeed was the case, and maybe the Rambam would acknowledge that, but the Rambam is referring to since then, that once there are no longer overt miracles, so indeed there no longer has to be magic as well, that was only existing in order to provide the Bechira for one to either believe or not believe in the existence of the miracles. We also have in this Aliyah the Makkah of Tzvardeya. Here, Rav Sham Shmuel Fal Hirsch comments that this is a frog, and the nature of this Makkah was that it was meant to be annoying rather than dangerous. And in Parakhas Pasuk Beis, we find the singular language, Vatal HaTzvardeya. Vatichas es Eretz Mitzrayim, and Chazal explained that it came up first as one frog, and only when the Mitzrayim struck it did it multiply into many, and continued to multiply each time it was struck. And the stipler Gon had a comment here that if indeed that was the case, so why did they keep doing this? You would think that if they realized it was multiplying every time they hit it, then they would stop hitting it. And he went on to explain that that is the nature of the Midah of Kas. By its very nature, it is irrational, and it pushes people to do irrational things against their self-interest. And that is why Chazal compare it to Avodah Zarah, because just as Avodah Zarah means giving yourself over to the control of an alien force, so too one who loses his temper is allowing a alien force to control him and to do things that are irrational and against his interest. And that may be relevant to the following psukim as well. We then read Vayasu Chein Hachartumim Bilatehem Vayalu Es Hatzvardim Al Eretz Mitzrayim. The magician has tried to do the same. Here, Rav Shamshon Ophel Hirsch explains it means that they tried to do the same actions, trying to reverse what was happening, but they were unsuccessful. And therefore, Paro summons Moshe and Aaron, and he asks them to daven for relief from this makkah. So Moshe tells Paro, okay, I will give you some control over here. You tell me exactly when you want this to happen, when you want this makkah to be removed, when I should daven for it. Paro asks for it to happen tomorrow, which is interesting. And here, Rav Simcha Zussel Breit, the Sefer Samdarach, explains why that is. He suggests that Paro is trying to understand exactly how this works, and that if indeed Moshe can daven today for a result that will happen on a delay, that will happen tomorrow, then that will display that indeed there is something quite powerful happening here at the Hashkacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it reflects the fact then that perhaps Paro does believe on some level that there is something genuine taking place. So here he is denying that God has any reality and has any power, and at the same time he is requesting for God's intervention in a very specific way. And it shows that there is a mixture here of belief and disbelief and some aspect of self-delusion, which is so often the case that those who are looking to rebel and to sin have that mixture of belief and disbelief and delusion. And no less of a figure than Paro, we find that mixture as well. And that is going to be a major part of his downfall.